This is the Popmatic Podcast for December 17th, 2014. And the Poppy for Best Picture goes to...
Look at her dress.
Wait for it. Wait for it. Popmatic. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Mike.
Bill.
Jeremy.
Amanda.
And I just bumped the table, and I would yell at someone else if they did that.
He would.
20 minutes of scolding. Oh, you guys, you missed out.
On today, the best movies of the year. We're each going to do our top three. We're just going to go around, and that's a long show, so let's get to it.
Number three.
Amanda.
Okay, to start, for number three, I have a question. Do you want to build a snowman? I had to ask. You knew the movie was going to be in there. It's been kind of the movie of the year, especially if you have anyone in your house under 5 years old. And as a long-term Disney fan, I am so happy to be reunited with what I would consider good Disney, along the lines of Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin, as opposed to, say, you know, Pocahontas or Hunchback of Notre Dame. But Frozen stars Idina Menzel, a.k.a. Adele Dazeem.
I can never remember her real name.
I know, right? Which, you know, those of us in the know might know her from. She was in Rent. She was in Wicked.
She was on Glee.
She was on Glee. I wasn't even going to say Glee, but awesome chick. Very good singer. She also, her co-star was Kristen Bell, who was Veronica Mars on TV. And who knew the chick could sing like that? Lovely voice. They're joined also by Jonathan Groff from Glee, who was Rachel Berry's boyfriend in the first season. He plays Kristoff, and it's just a good show. It's so much more about a family dynamic as opposed to the prince saving the princess. And if you have not seen it, which you're like one of two people in the world, feel free to check out Frozen. It is good. There are toys everywhere for Christmas, and I'm going to stop now before I break in two more songs. Let it go.
I'm okay. I actually like Frozen. It's very funny, and you know,
and it's well written. Like, it's there's more to it than just.
It kind of pokes the genre, the Disney formula of the girl meets her man of her dreams immediately kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally makes really fun of itself.
Yeah,
I thought, finally they get it.
Yeah, I thought we had, as the parent of a under 5 year old, I thought that we had escaped that world. And then one morning my son woke up and was going, for the first time in forever. And I was like, what is this? Is he making this up? And then
he's a songwriter. We figured it out.
And then he was singing Let It Go again.
Okay, Mr. Bill, no more Frozen.
My number three choice is Nightcrawler. We do not have this movie in our collection yet, but I'm sure when it's released on DVD, I'm sure we will. Nightcrawler is a dark film that concerns Lewis Bloom, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, a sociopath who picks up a camcorder and radio scanner and begins to film automobile accidents, shootings, home invasion. Nightcrawler is one twisted little flick. The writer and director put you right in the action. You're a part of Mr. Bloom's rise as a successful entrepreneur. I highly recommend it. Brian.
I haven't seen that yet, and I want to.
I really want to see it, but yeah, I missed it in theaters. Yeah. You know,
it's like and it's still playing.
Yeah,
it's still track it down to like the one or two that's still showing it.
It'll probably be still playing when this posts. So, yeah, you can see that in the theater, and then you get the DVD from the library.
How many people do you think went to see it thinking it was an X-Men movie?
My sister brought that up. She went off on like 20 minutes. I was like, they finally made a movie about Nightcrawler. All right. Wait, what's this?
He's not blue.
Yeah.
This
where's
is
that, where's
so
that
much
coming?
Better.
Yeah.
Kelsey Grammer is excellent in this movie. I want to see it too. It looks really good.
Uh-huh. I like movies about sociopaths. But now for something.
You'll love this one.
two bloody severed thumbs up.
And now for something completely different. I actually want to talk about a documentary, but a documentary about a movie. That is Jodorowsky's Dune. I teased this on previous episodes. If you don't know, Alejandro Jodorowsky is a director of sort of long psychedelic allegories, sort of a cinema shaman of the 1960s and 70s, and he was the first director to get the rights to Frank Herbert's Dune, because in the 60s and 70s, you know, Yoderowski was this crazy psychedelic cinema shaman, and he wanted to make this meta mega movie that would be like LSD for the whole world when you saw the movie. Didn't really have anything to do with the actual book, yeah, Dune.
Not much.
Yeah, I love he hadn't even read it. He's so, like, somebody I trusted said it was good, so I was like, hey, what the hell?
I have teased in the past how the terrible Masters of the Universe movie, the Skeletor headdress, was actually designed by the French comic book artist Mobius, and that was actually supposed to be Salvador Dali's costume as the Emperor in Yoderowski's version of Dune. Now, they made this book of what Dune was going to look like. To make this book, he hired all this talent. He got all these actors. And I don't want to say who the actors and the talent are, but it's just so many really talented people that went on to make so many other movies. So they took the book to Hollywood. Everyone in Hollywood turned it down, but then all the ideas that were in the book appear in Hollywood movies for decades to come.
Yeah.
And so it's the story of the pre-production of the movie and then how all these other movies ripped everything off. And I don't want to say who he got to almost make his version of Dune and what movies ripped him off, because that would be spoilers. But as is typical, truth is stranger than fiction. Even if you have no interest in Dune and no interest in Yoderowski as a filmmaker, it's just an amazing story about, you know, what is usually considered the best movie that was never made.
Yeah. It is like jaw-dropping how amazing some of the casting, some of the musical talent, the art.
His enthusiasm for the movie that he didn't make all these years later, too, was really infectious, I thought, too. It was like one of the...
fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
It was beautiful, man. I was like, yes, let's do this now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Here's all my money.
You know, did you race home and try to see if the book was for sale?
Yeah.
I sure did. I was like, I don't care how much it costs, I want the book.
Did any of the stuff that was in that book... I know it made its way into a bunch of other movies, but did it make it into the actual Dune movie? Did they use any of the stuff... I couldn't remember if that was part of the movie or not.
I don't think so.
I didn't feel like it was.
All that stuff went into mostly the Meta Baron comics Yoderowski and Mobius did later.
That's right.
Which I don't think you can get from the library.
No.
Maybe we'll try to get them to order them.
So Amanda could get them.
Yes, you get them through interlibrary loan. So the other kind of thing that's really good about this book, Yoderowski is a very charismatic person. And I think it is a really great life advice about success and failure. You know, there's a lesson there, you know, how to handle great success and then also how to handle failure if, you know, what you want to have happen doesn't happen. And I think that's one of the great sort of like lessons of the movie, if the movie has a lesson. And then his other fiction films have the same, you know, allegorical message often, the sort of alchemical process, you know, that are actually sort of taking place inside of us. And I do think that in an alternative universe, Alejandro Yoderowski and John Waters are sort of these twin tricksters sort of like running around the universe, the different planets causing mischief.
Yeah, that'd be a good buddy movie.
That'd be fun.
That would be a good buddy movie.
It's my favorite movie of next year.
All right. Jeremy, number three.
My number three favorite film of the year is Obvious Child. It stars Jenny Slate and Jack Lacey. Jenny Slate, you probably know her from saying the F word on Saturday Night Live. She also did the short movie, a short film on the internet, the Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, where she's this little clamshell with eyes. In Obvious Child, she plays a stand-up comedian who gets pregnant after a post-breakup one-night stand. And most of what you hear about the movie is that the main character gets an abortion, but that's a major plot point, but it's not like a preachy will she or won't she movie, and it's not controversial or melodramatic or any of that stuff. It's just a romantic comedy in which that happens to happen. And it also happens to be somewhat romantic and funny and doesn't star Katherine Heigl. And it features a really good Paul Simon song, which was nice, too, because I don't always like Paul Simon songs. And when I do, they're usually really, really good.
Which Paul Simon song was it?
It's called Obvious Child.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
How obvious.
I didn't know that was a song.
Okay,
I never
song.
Heard of that song before. It's on the soundtrack, and I was like, oh.
I don't know his catalog, but then it has, like, these really pounding drums and, like, really kind of, like, intense. And then there's, like, a dance scene in it where they're dancing in their underwear to that song. And it's not a feel-good movie, but it's a funny, really funny movie. And she has some stand-up scenes in it where she's really, really funny. And it was based on a short film of the same name, and the DVD includes the short film, and it's really interesting to sort of see the evolution of between the two and how the story expanded and changed.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I was thinking of recommending it on here.
Well, what are you going to recommend on here?
Why?
Thanks for setting up that excellent scene.
I was just about to say excellent scene. Get out of my head, Jeremy. Get out of my head. I thought today I would recommend Blue Ruin, a noirish film. One of the subgenres of noir I dig is that where it's more realistic, kind of like, you know, a common man. A normal person driven to commit crime and it doesn't go very well. Yeah, like almost all noir.
Oh, man, let me tell you.
I've recommended stuff in this show before that is super violent and cartoony, but this is more like real life violence. I just thought I'd mention, you know, in real life, I'm not a very violent person. I just kind of like it in my movies. But, you know, in real life, violence, not cool.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
That's right.
Mike is a gentle giant.
Mike smash, smash. And Blue Ruin is about a homeless guy who learns that the man who murdered his parents has been released from prison, and he sets out on a path of revenge. But without spoiling it, I will say that... you know, like most noir, it does not go well. It's gripping from start to finish. The violence is scary and gross and, like, shocking. And you really get the impression, you know, this is more like real life, that vengeance isn't really the way to go. Good stuff. 5 stars.
Number 2.
Okay, number 2.
Oh, boy. What animated film is it this time?
It's not animated. It's not animated.
Oh, okay.
My number 2 movie is the Veronica Mars movie. Veronica Mars, for those of you that don't know and haven't listened to this podcast before, because we always talk about it, was a TV show on the UPN. It had 3 seasons. It was, they were fighting for a 4th season, and he had, like, the pilot for the next season made, and they went ahead and canceled them because they didn't figure that anybody loved them. Fast forward to now, and they went on Kickstarter and actually had a campaign to see if they could raise, I think they wanted to raise, like, $500,000, and they ended up getting $2 million in 10 hours.
Yeah, I was gonna say, didn't they surpass their goal within hours?
Yeah, like they were—they set the record for the fastest project to reach 1 million, and then to reach 2 million.
My coworker sat and was refreshing it and watching the numbers.
Yeah,
I was doing that the first day too, because it's just like, this is like astounding.
Yeah, I didn't even hear about it till it was already over $1 million, and I'm like, well, they don't need me, so I didn't give them any money. But they ended up—they had over 91,000 donors, and they raised over $5.7 million. So they had plenty to make a movie. They released it. Warner Brothers did pick it up for distribution after all of that. But this was the first movie I've ever watched where I just watched it on demand on my TV. Like, they released it on, I think it was Amazon, and you could just purchase it. And you didn't have to go to a theater or anything. So I think it played at the Bell Court here in town.
Yeah, for like a week or two, I believe.
Yeah, it wasn't there very long. I'm like, well, I could just watch it in my living room and save myself the trip. Which I did, and so I enjoyed it. It stars Kristen Bell, who I had just talked about from Frozen, so apparently I have this thing where I pick two of the same person.
There's a theme coming.
Thing with me. And it was written and directed by Rob Thomas, who did the original show.
It's not in Matchbox 20.
That always,
not,
like,
I know.
Every time I get confused, I'm like, so the Matchbox 20 guy did Veronica Mars? That's what happened to
That'll
him.
That'll be really
good
awesome.
Good for him. Though, so. Oh, wait, no, completely different guy.
He still sucks.
I always want to call him Rob Bell, too, because there's another guy that's Rob Bell, and that way I get him confused with Kristen Bell, and Rob Thomas, Kristen Bell, everybody's happy.
It's kind of like Christopher Lloyd, the producer of Frasier, is not Christopher Lloyd, the guy from Back to the Future. I didn't know that person.
That game would be cool if it was.
I did not know that. I guess I just sort of assumed the producer of Frasier.
I lost Jeremy.
Okay. You know you're scanning the credits like me. I'm like, Christopher Lloyd.
So the plot of Veronica Mars. Let's focus on me. I've only seen 3 movies this whole year, and
Sorry.
I want to talk about her.
I'll shut up now.
She is in New York with Piz, her boyfriend, and then, you know, she's not a detective anymore. She's trying to get a job at a law firm, and, you know, drama happens back home in Neptune, and she's forced to come back and, you know, try to save the day again. Her friends are all there. And I really did like the Veronica Mars. The one thing I missed is when you have a TV show, there's a bunch of little side plots that you have that kind of help develop the characters. And when you only have a 2-hour movie, you can't really do it. You've got to stay on the main arc. So that was a little bit disappointing. But overall, the movie was awesome. Very worth the $5.7 million that was raised by everyone but me. And an excellent cast. Or to the TV show. Okay, Mr. Bell.
Were there things from the show that went unanswered that were answered in the movie? I never watched.
Yes and no. I mean, there were some things that they didn't, and maybe they're saving him for other movies. And they did start a line of books as well, too, which we have the first one. So I don't know if they're saving it for some other, but I mean, some of the big questions got answered, which I'm not going to spoil here.
Okay. My second choice is a dark spy drama called A Most Wanted Man, based on John le Carré's novel. I recommended this movie earlier on a Tickle My Fancy, and I had to go ahead and recommend it again. I want as many people to see it as possible. A German espionage agent, played by the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was tracking funds being sent to a terrorist organization. Now, there's more to the movie than that. That's a really brief description. It's a great character study. It's filled with intrigue, double crosses, and the finale of that movie is just devastating. It's just pure brilliance, and I can't recommend it enough.
Wasn't that one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's last movies?
I think it was, yeah.
I was thinking it was the last one, because I know he had several that were sort of in the pipeline.
I think that was his last completed.
Hunger. So, like, he's still in the Hunger Games. Yeah. I haven't seen
I've heard they had to digitally, maybe not this one, but the next one or something.
Yeah,
digitally do his part sometimes.
That is an awesome segue for...
I think I've heard of the movie that you're going to recommend.
So it's an awesome segue for the movie that I was going to recommend. That was The Congress, starring Robin Wright. So in The Congress, it's in the near future, and Robin Wright plays an actress named Robin Wright. And
she didn't work out well.
Yeah, it's worked out well, right? And she's aging by Hollywood standards. So the studio makes her a deal that we will basically do like a 3D scan of your body and your personality and your speech pattern, and then you no longer get to be Robin Wright as a public person, but we get to use the animated Robin Wright in any movie that we want to make. She is going through some problems with her life, and she doesn't want to deal with the Hollywood bullcrap. She says yes. And then it jumps to the future. And in the future, they do this thing now where they scan actors, or they make up imaginary actors, and they just make movies. And even like these imaginary actors even appear like on TV shows, like answering questions, but they aren't real people anymore. But what happens is there's going to be a futurological congress, and instead of just having imaginary actors, there are going to be drugs where basically you sort of live inside Roger Rabbit world when you take the drugs. She's invited back because she was one of the first actors to be scanned, and this is like the first step to like being part of the new world. But then there's a revolution, or there's an attempted revolution against being the cartoon world controlled by large entertainment companies. After this, basically it becomes very Dickian. That is Philip K. Dick-esque, and what's real and what's not, and what's the cartoon world and what's not, all sort of blurs. And she has to decide what world she wants to live in, and what's true and what's not. I don't want to give away any spoilers, but because of what's happening in her personal life, this weighs on the decisions that she makes on the end about whether or not she wants to live in the cartoon world. This is a really brilliant, beautiful movie. The first part is that's not animated is sort of about the way that Hollywood treats women. You know, it basically, you know, you have people on TV saying that you're fat, but then also people are trying to hack into your phone to get pictures of you in your underwear. So like that's all sort of there. And then in the second half, you know, it gets very philosophical, but I think they mesh together very well because they're related. And it didn't play in Nashville except for, I think, for one night only. It played at the Nashville Film Festival, and I think Bill was in the room that night.
Yep.
And so I saw it, but of course, the library is amazing. We have many copies of this on DVD. I don't think a lot of people saw it. Check it out. It's definitely a sleeper gem. It's kind of like maybe if, dare I say it, Philip K. Dick wrote Roger Rabbit and was a feminist.
Very briefly, Robin Wright had a major role in A Most Wanted Man.
Robin Wright career resurgence happened this year, House of Cards, Most Wanted Man, this movie, which was like all about, in some ways, this is sort of like a psychedelic version of being John Malkovich.
Like, how did you get more psychedelic than being John Malkovich?
Oh, man.
You should watch The Congress. It's a good movie. Jeremy.
My number two pick is Snowpiercer. Seems like you said something that you didn't like it, maybe?
I didn't hate it. I just thought that nerds tend to be very full of hyperbole, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of, it's the greatest film ever, and we have to kneel at its altar and stuff. And I thought it was really good.
I don't know why I'm setting up my talking about how I like it, about saying, like, hey, you didn't like it, right?
Yeah,
you
Jacques Hughes.
Well, speaking of Jacques Hughes, it is based on a French comic book called La Transpersonnée by Jacques Loeb.
Excellent accent.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Magnifique.
By Jacques Loeb.
Benjamin,
Jake Loeb.
Benjamin Legrand and Jean-Marc Rocher. Now, I was sort of like on board.
Trade board.
I was on board with this movie before I ever saw it, and thought that it was the greatest movie I ever saw before I saw it. because I was like, they're on a train and it doesn't stop going. And I thought that was, that's not how I feel about the movie. I just really did enjoy it. It lived up to my expectations despite whatever sort of flaws it might have had. But the movie is about climate disaster has forced the last survivors of humanity to hop on board a gigantic train, which becomes a locomotive metaphor for class stratification and oppression. It was a huge hit in South Korea, but then stumbled at the American box office because then there was all kinds of stuff where they were either not going to release it or they were going to add narration to it to dumb it down a little bit.
Or they were going
to
cut like 20 to 40 minutes. They were going to
cut a huge amount of time out of it. And then they ended up not doing that. And it was like the director cut a deal to leave it as it was. But then basically the studio killed it with no promotion or very little promotion or anything. But it has a 95% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's based on a comic book, and Captain America is the star of it. So it sort of seems like it should have been a gigantic movie, and it wasn't. But I think it was not a blockbuster because dirty, goop-eating revolutionaries on a never-ending train ride aren't quite as charming as a talking raccoon and his tree buddy. So it has a very high concept, and it's also kind of ridiculous because it's about a train that doesn't stop moving. But there's some really amazing action scenes. One of my favorite parts was Tilda Swinton's Gonzo performance.
She is great in that movie.
I was trying to think of how to describe it, and I said she's part Margaret Thatcher and part how can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat guy from towards the wall. And I think that gets pretty close. Like, she was pretty spectacular.
She was my favorite character.
And I really did enjoy it. It was a really entertaining movie.
I thought you conducted that quite well.
Oh!
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll train you in good puns.
Oh, wow.
If you enter this show. Well, I'm going to go full steam ahead. And,
Wow. Your sense of humor has just the ticket. I just kicked the table. I'm so sorry. And my chair is creaking every time I move, and I can't stop moving. Like that train. It's just my caboose is uncomfortable.
I see.
What do you have, Mike?
Let's put Brian's growing rage on ice.
The train jokes ran a little long. That's all I'm saying. I don't care about it. Everything else is good.
Oh, man, I would do the whole thing now. Can't cut that.
I'm like still trying to think of more.
Okay, so number two. I will not dwell on this one for very long because I mentioned it in this podcast like four or five times already, but my number two is Under the Skin. Scarlett Johansson plays an alien who's sent to Earth to do something to the men of Scotland. I don't want to go into detail because it's even now I'm not really sure what it was, but it was really weird and really awesome. It's creepy and unnerving and lingered long in my brain after it is over. The title is a metaphor, as it were, for it gets under your skin. Yeah, I like those kind of thinky movies that, what did that mean? Start thinking about it long afterwards, you know. As opposed to those popcorn movies where, you know, you forget it the minute it ends.
Number one!
So happy Taco Tuesday, everybody.
Oh no, the craggle.
So we've talked about my number one. I think Brian brought it up earlier, but I definitely wanted to mention the Lego movie. I have seen it 3 times. I went to see it in the theater, and then when I was flying across the Atlantic, both going and coming, it was on, so I watched it. I watched it going and I watched it coming. And
everything is still awesome.
Everything was still awesome. You know, it's got a cast of thousands. Will Arnett plays Batman. Will Ferrell plays Lord Business, the founder of Taco Tuesday, and the holder of the Kraggle. Morgan Freeman is the creepy narrator, 60s hippie guy, Vitruvius, and Elizabeth Banks is Wild Child. But my favorite character, I think, is Liam Neeson, who plays Good Cop, Bad Cop. And his face actually flips around like the little Lego guy.
I don't know if we should do this.
We're going to do it.
We're totally going to do it.
Except he has a better accent than either one of us. But that's okay.
Good morning, apartment. Ready to start the day. Jumping jacks. Hit them. 1, 2, 3. I am so pumped up. Yes. Overpriced coffee.
That's $37.
Awesome!
Everything is awesome.
Oh my gosh, I love
everything
this song.
It's cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome.
No, guys, wait up. Where am I?
Come with me if you want to not die.
What is happening?
You're the special. And the prophecy states that you're the most important person in the universe. That's you, right?
Yes, that's me.
Relax, everybody, I'm here.
Batman? Awesome!
Who are you here to see?
I'm here to see your butt.
Oh my gosh! Wham! First try.
My fellow master builders.
Hello!
Lord Business plans to end the world as we know it. There is yet one hope. The special has arisen.
I know what you're thinking. He is the least qualified person to lead us. And you are right. A house divided against itself would be better than this.
Abraham Lincoln!
I'm not the special.
I'm just a regular, normal guy.
You have the ability to be the special because I believe in you.
Robots, destroy him!
Aloha, loser!
We'll wing it. It's a bad pun.
Take him to the melding chamber.
Isn't there supposed to also be a good cop?
Hi, buddy. Would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, actually.
Too bad.
We are entering your mind.
What?
I don't think he's ever had an original thought.
That's not true. Introducing the double-decker couch. So everyone could watch TV together and be buddies.
That is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Let me handle this. That idea is just the worst.
To the Batmobile.
Dang it.
To the invisible jet. Dang it.
If you have not seen it, you need to. I'm not sure, like, I don't know that they sold me on the sappy real life ending. It could have been awesomer, but it was still a great movie. It was still, everything was still awesome. And that song will be in your head for the rest of the day.
Why it works is just the jokes are just so funny.
Yeah, it's definitely written for a wide range of ages. It's not just...
I'm with you. I thought the ending was kind of sappy and a little bit cliche, but the rest of the movie is so funny that it's all right. And then, too, it's almost like a parody of the popcorn movies that Mike said that he doesn't remember. Like, this is actually works as this really great satire about big mainstream movies. And there are, many of them are referenced, you know?
Yeah, they really, yeah.
So like,
Star Wars shows up at some point.
The Gandalf joke is like, oh, man, I lost it.
Superman and Green Lantern show up.
Oh, yeah. It's like, so
Abraham Lincoln's there for
sex. I still need to see it. I haven't seen the movie?
I have young children and haven't seen the Lego movie.
My wife is concerned about the violence. If there's guns and stuff, like it's like off the table.
It's a good segue for Bill.
Well, as a matter of fact, my first choice out of my other... is not a dark movie. I was going to pick Under My Skin, but you took that. But anyway, my first choice, like I said, is not a dark movie. It's called Chef, and it was written and directed by Jon Favreau, and he stars in it. And I absolutely love Chef. When I went into it, I really didn't know what to expect, and I really didn't think I was going to like it that much. Chef is more about an artist not trying to compromise his vision. It's also a romantic story. It's funny, and it's got a great cast. Sofia Vergara, John Leguizamo, Scarlett Johansson, Oliver Platt, Robert Downey Jr. without his Iron Man suit.
This is madness, huh?
This carne asada, check it out.
Wow.
Chef Big Dog up all night cooking.
Shut up and taste this, some amuse douche. Come here, guy.
Look at that. You like it?
Yeah.
We're gonna cook like this.
We're being reviewed by the most important critic in the city.
Now suddenly you're gonna be an artist. Well, be an artist on your own time. It's my restaurant.
The kitchen is my domain. That was our deal.
The deal has now changed. Either you stay or you go.
So you're threatening to fire me now?
No, I'm telling you what I'm prepared to do if you don't cook my menu.
It's up. Go. The review's out.
His dramatic weight gain can only be explained by the fact that he must be eating all the food sent back to the kitchen.
I didn't like what they wrote about you.
I didn't like it either.
Who cares?
I do, because I could have done better. I should have cooked food that I was gonna cook. There are chefs that cook food that they believe in, and people will try because they're open to a new experience, and they'll end up liking it.
Hey, what are you doing? Don't do it. What are you writing?
Chef, don't. That's not a good idea.
Just listen. I won't send it until we all say it's okay. Why don't you come by again tonight? I got a whole new menu just for you, asshole.
Oh, no.
That's not good.
Give me the phone.
Don't do it. That's out there now, bro.
What happens? Why would you do that?
You can't take that back.
Dad, did you post anything since last night?
You gotta be kidding me.
Wow. You realize how many people have read this?
You're trending, bro.
You're never going to be happy cooking for someone else.
Food truck's a great idea.
We're talking about a white-on-white 88 Chevy Grumman food truck. It's a blank canvas for your dreams. I'm going to have him pull it around.
Thank you.
Don't thank me till you see it.
So what are you going to do?
You're going to laugh.
Tony, Carl's got a taco truck.
For real?
That was so jealous. When I heard your voice, I was like, that's what I want to do.
I get to touch people's lives with what I do, and I love it. And I want to share this with you.
Dude, I'm putting a little cornstarch on my werewolves, man. It's too humid down here.
Dad, wake up. Frank's putting cornstarch on his balls.
Want some?
It's like baby powder.
It's nice, right?
Nice.
Gente de zona. Una vez más.
I kind of think Jon Favreau said, well, I've done the two Iron Man movies and the special effects. I'm going back to my indie roots when I started out with Swingers, and I'm glad he did because this is a movie I can't get out of my head, and I saw it early in the summer. I was just thinking how well-crafted, how put together it was. And also, one thing about it, it will make you hungry.
So it will. Yes, you'll want a Cuban sandwich.
I highly recommend Chef, written and directed and starring Jon Favreau.
I really liked it because of the, like, when you're a chef, you don't have a lot of time with your family, and then they went on this road trip with the food truck with his son and, like, kind of rebonded with his son. I thought that was a really... heartwarming without being sappy.
All right, so there's a lot of Disney and a lot of animated films on this episode. So my number one movie of the year, this may surprise you, Maleficent. I love this movie. If the movie was very big budget, you've probably heard of it, but if you don't know, if you're living under a toadstool, it is a fictional biopic of Maleficent, the evil queen in Sleeping Beauty, but this is actual live action movie with a lot of special effects.
I shall bestow a gift on the child.
Before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she will fall into a sleep like death.
Curious little beastie.
Bring her to me.
I know you're there. Don't be afraid.
I am not afraid.
Then come out.
Then you'll be afraid.
All the other fairies fly. Why don't you?
I had wings once. They were strong. But they were stolen from me. There is evil in this world. Hatred. And revenge.
Bring me her head.
I call on those who live in the shadows. Fight with me now!
Is it true? Are you Maleficent?
Maleficent is actually played by Angelina Jolie, and I'm just going to put this out there to get it out of the way. Yes, one of the primary reasons I like this movie is because Angelina Jolie with horns and wings and a tight leather, whatever that is that she's wearing, and these cheekbones, it just does something for me in my brain. Oh. It just answers a question that I didn't even know that I was asking.
In your brain?
And then I saw it, and I was like,
which brain?
And I was like, yes, I'm glad that question has been answered now.
After dark.
I think it would just be sort of undeniable to ignore that. That's one of the things that's happening in this movie.
Was that a motivator for seeing it, or was that just something that was a side effect of seeing it?
As you were seeing it.
That was just bonus.
Okay.
Right? That was just like bonus. Yeah. Right? That was like bonus. That she's a very beautiful woman, But if you put on those big crazy cheekbones and the horns, I was just like, okay, yeah, I understand.
Got it.
Well, yep, I got it. All right. Besides that, you know, it's a PG movie and it was a movie for kids, but for older teens and adults, like, this big central plot point is that something happens to her that's a pretty obvious metaphor for rape. And so it's sort of like this rape narrative and also what happens to yourself if, you know, bad things happen to you or you do bad things and you just let it linger if you don't try to heal. I think that maybe that's the message for kids. But there's enough there that's sort of happening in different layers. Visually, it's very stunning. I'm a D&D nerd, very picky about my dragons. I like the dragon. They saved the dragon for the very end and it wasn't completely over the top and they didn't have to do three-hour-long movies to have one good dragon. And then, you know, some people said it was all style and no substance. That's exactly what the original Sleeping Beauty was, and it's very beautiful and a classic. So I love that about Maleficent. I like the score, too. I hum it a lot. Maleficent, my number one movie of the year.
Not to bring you down, but I did not like that movie.
It's all good.
I'm with you on the
contrast.
Well, it is very beautiful. I mean, I will give you that. And I liked the how it's set up, but I thought the story was very weak. Because Maleficent, for me, when I'm referring with Sleeping Beauty, she is like one of my all-time favorite Disney people. Because she just is so cool, and she's so bad, and she's so stylish, and she's just so. I'm like, I can't say that to my nieces because she's too evil for them. She's like, she's scary.
She's like overtly satanic in
yes,
Sleeping Beauty.
Yes, absolutely. And I just think she, like, if I were a bad guy, I wouldn't be like her. And so I feel like they undercut all of that power in this by trying to make her this, like.
Like relatable?
Yeah, or? like bad things happen and like she was put like in a bad situation. And so she's not really evil. She's just drawn that way kind of situation.
Yes. For instance, in the original Sleeping Beauty, she has all these little minions.
Uh-huh.
So I think in Maleficent, the idea was, well, what's their life like, even though the humans think that they're evil? And
they're having a party in the glen with lights and flowers and yay. So that was what I thought that they could have written that better. Like, she could have been darker. Like, they tried to be, oh, no, she's all flowers and rainbows. And so that was why I just thought they took all her power out to try to make her relatable. Yeah. And
so it sounds like Darth Vader were like, you know,
yeah, like if Darth Vader were
scary,
like,
scary and awesome,
Pinocchio.
And then you see him as like a kid and it's like,
yeah.
Hey, wizards!
Yeah.
Let's go skateboard!
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
That's actually very. That's like very close to the voice that the little trolls and demons have in the fairy world. And,
oh man!
And definitely, Maleficent is the protagonist. I think even more so than the actual human princess.
Yeah.
And the villain is the king. You know, who's like strangely obsessed and warped. Mm-hmm. You know, by the things that he's done and the wrong things he's done in the past to Maleficent. Well, I don't know if you caught this, but at the beginning in the credits, it's actually the opposite, like the reverse side of the castle in Sleeping Beauty, which is the Disney logo.
I didn't.
So it's like the other side of the story. Mm. But I totally could see that if you take the evil out of Maleficent, that it drains her of her power.
Well, her name means evil.
I didn't know it was an actual word until like I found it.
Well, because I made my husband look it up after. I'm like, look up that word. I want to see what that means, just because for argument. And like, it's supposed to be an antonym of beneficent.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it me and then, you know, Mal is bad, and I'm just like, it means bad. So how do you make her the hero?
I've never liked those stories where it's like, you know, somebody's got an evil name and you get to see them when they're young and they're really nice.
They're
hot, scratchy,
down the street.
Hey, how's Sinestro as a kid? You know, Dr. Maleficus or something, you know. Dr. Doom as a child, I'm sure he was really nice. He was driven to be Dr. Doom.
We used to play Monopoly together all the time, you know.
I like those movies, though, that are whatever the genre is, where there's a like the biopic of a fictional character. Like, I know Philip Jose Farmer wrote a bunch of books. It was like the biography of Doc Savage.
Yeah, the
Walt
Newton books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like stuff like that. And that's kind of what Wicked is. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a retelling of, it's like the Wicked Witch's story as opposed to.
I like whatever that genre is, if that's a genre.
We'll make it a genre just for you.
That's fine.
To put it in comic book terms, it's like the Maleficent origin story.
Yes, I like a good origin story.
Two of our listeners just went, oh.
I totally get that now.
So it's like origin. Wolverine Origins.
Oh, that's not.
What's
that's
my
not
favorite talking. Movie of the year?
Yep, that's what we were trying to get to.
My favorite movie of the year is We Are the Best, written and directed by Lukas Moodysson. It's a Swedish movie, and it debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival in 2013. And then was released here in the U.S. in 2014. It's based on a I guess, comic book memoir by the directors. And that's not one of the, it's not a comic book movie. This happens to be related. My entire life does not revolve around comic books. This part.
Mine does.
Most of my life revolves.
Yours doesn't? What?
Mostly it does.
I'm in between issues right now.
Yeah, you should see the stack I bought this weekend. But it's based on a book written by the director's wife, Coco, called Never Goodnight. And unfortunately, there's not an English translation, at least not one that I could find. But it takes place in Stockholm in 1982. And it's about three teenage girls, Bobo, Clara, and Hedvig, who start a punk band together, despite the fact that only Hedvig can play an instrument, guitar, and she's classically trained and also very religious. And everyone around them insists that punk is dead and that they're wasting their time. So they sort of, it's about how their friendship forms around this band and how they kind of just keep doing the thing that they want to do despite everyone around them saying it's not going to work. And they write a really brilliant song about how they don't like gym class.
It's called, I need to learn this song. And,
yeah,
and
wow.
It's all, the movie's in Swedish, but the translation for one of the lyrics is, "The world is a morgue, but you're watching Bjorn Borg." And the chorus, they just keep saying, "Hot the spot!" Which is hate the sport. And they keep saying, "Hate the sport! Hate the sport!" And they're just like shredding on their instruments. And it is absolutely a joyous, joyous movie. It was smiling almost the whole time. I left the theater smiling. And I really do love movies about fictional bands, because I used to be in a band and kind of wished I was in a band. And the fact that I'm kind of a terrible musician makes this movie all the more special, because these kids don't know what they're doing, and they're doing it anyway. And
it's
the essence of punk rock, I guess. And there's a Swedish punk band called Ebba Grön that has a couple of songs in it that was really good. And it was really, really great. Great movie. Check it out. Mike?
Well, it seems like we all had happy movies as our number ones. Wow, go figure.
No darkness or death. We gave
it. Maleficent.
Except for Maleficent?
That's kind of, yeah, I don't know.
Well, for Brian, that's really happy.
That's like part of the pony.
Yeah, really. So my number one movie, I mentioned this way back in the Renaissance podcast, Long Under the Skin. So it was the Grand Budapest Hotel. Yes, Wes Anderson again. I expect everybody to grunt and skip the next 2 minutes. That's fine. I don't care. Wes Anderson, he's worse than Hitler. Fast forward the next 3 minutes. You know, it's like cat. It's like, you know, when you mention a cat to a dog person, it's all like, cats are the worst thing that's ever been born. They disgust me it's like, whoa, dude, you know. Same thing for like Wes Anderson, you know. But last time around, I did not mention actually what the movie's about. It's kind of like a nesting doll, like his version of Inception kind of thing, where like this girl reads a book in a cemetery next to the grave of her nation's greatest writer. Then it shows that writer writing a book about his trip to the Grand Budapest Hotel decades before. Then it shows the writer as a young man talking to the owner of the hotel. And then the rest of the movie, the bulk of the film, is the owner as a young man. He is the houseboy of the Grand Budapest Hotel in its heyday in like the 30s. He's like a manservant to the concierge, Gustav M., played by Ralph Fiennes.
Why do you want to be a lobby boy?
Who wouldn't? At the Grand Budapest, sir.
And so my life began. Junior lobby boy in training under the strict command of Monsieur Gustav H. Many of the hotel's most valued and distinguished guests came for him.
I love you.
I love you. She was dynamite in the sack, by the way.
She was 84.
I've had older.
This was also when I met Agatha.
She's charming. She's so charming.
Is he flirting with you?
Yes.
I approve of this union.
I became his pupil, and he was to be my counselor and guardian.
The police are here.
Tell them I'll be right down. She's been murdered, and you think I did it.
Hey! Stop!
You're looking so well, darling, you really are. I don't know what sort of cream they've put on you down at the morgue, but I want some.
This is Madame D's last will and testament. To Monsieur Gustav H., I bequeath a painting known as Boy with Apple.
Wow.
What? Who's Gustav H.?
I'm afraid that's me, darling.
If I learn you ever once laid a finger on my mother's body, living or dead...
I go to bed with all my friends.
We need to make a plan for your survival. Hide this. It's in code, and you might need a magnifying glass to read it, but it tells you exactly where and how to find Boy with Apple.
I'm a baker. I'm not a fence, if that's the term.
May I offer any of you inmates a plate of mush?
I want roadblocks at every junction for 50 kilometers. I want rail blocks at every train station for 100 kilometers.
Get in!
I want 50 men and 10 bloodhounds ready in 5 minutes.
You can't arrest him simply because he's a bloody immigrant.
Take your hands off my lobby boy!
Have you ever been questioned by the authorities?
Yes, on one occasion.
What?
I was arrested and tortured by the rebel militia after the desert uprising.
Right. Well, you know the drill then. Zip it.
Fiennes is in, like, fine form. Hey. Ooh. I loved every moment he was on screen. He's very casual, cursing from such a cultured British thespian. In tone, it's more like a comedy from, like, the 30s or 40s. There's some definite, like, screwball bits. Like, the climax of the film is Gustav M. and the houseboy going down a mountain trying to escape this assassin guy who's going after them. And there's, like, trying to dodge trees and stuff. There's this really bad, like, model of them going down the mountain because it's Wes Anderson. I would almost want to show it to my mom, who, you know, loves old movies. But I think she'd get really annoyed / confused at the framing stories because they don't really have anything to do with the rest of the plot. I don't know. I had this really big grin on my face the whole time. As I said before, you know, it's very rare I see a movie at the theater that I just want to immediately turn around and go, like, you know, see the next showing. Probably his best film, Grand Budapest Hotel. Good times.
Tickling my fancy is Dick Cavett, wit, writer, and of course talk show host. He has a new book called Brief Encounters, Conversations, Magic Moments, Assorted Hijinks. This book is a collection of essays. It covers everything from the $25,000 Pyramid, Stan Laurel, Nora Ephron, Jonathan Winters, and many more. I highly recommend the CD audio because Dick Cavett reads it and it makes it much more enjoyable. It's like Dick Cavett telling you a story about Stan Laurel or people who drank the Burtons. But if you want the book, according to Mel Brooks, Brief Encounter is the best bathroom book ever written. Each story takes the right amount of time. High praise indeed.
So I had mentioned earlier Kristen Bell and Idina Menzel, and they both have Christmas songs out since we're in the season. Why not mention them? Kristen Bell sings with my favorite a cappella group, Straight No Chaser. The song is called Text Me Merry Christmas. It's on their Christmas album, Under the Influence, and we have it on Hoopla. And Idina Menzel also has a new Christmas album out called Holiday Wishes. The first half is better than the last half. The last half gets kind of sappy and emotional, and I like the funner Christmas songs. But it is good, and she does a duet with Michael Bublé on Baby It's Cold Outside that is worth hearing, also on Hoopla. And just a reminder that tomorrow, December 18th, at noon on the second floor of the library, I will be playing Christmas songs. Not Baby It's Cold Outside or Text Me Merry Christmas, but you should still come here because it'll be fun.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer?
No, as much as my husband asks me for that one every year, I'm not doing that.
So there's a website called Letterboxd.com where you can there's like a diary feature where you can put movies that you see and not movies that you own. It's kind of like a Goodreads for movies. It's very cool. So using that, I found out that I've watched 272 movies this year. So narrowing it down to three was kind of a pain. So I thought I'd mention some runners-up that I saw this year, not necessarily came out this year, that I really liked in no particular order. I liked Cutie and the Boxer, a documentary about these two artists in New York. It seems to be a lot more about their relationship and like how they met and marital woes and stuff, which is a little bit more interesting than the guy's art in general. I saw the Taking Pelham 1-2-3, awesome crime movie from the 70s with Walter Matthau, which I really liked. You know, that kind of crime, I'm in a crimey mood. Speaking of crime, I also saw Brick, which is amazing. That's by the guy who directed Looper. It was like his first film. It's kind of like a film noir in a high school. The JGL.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, that guy. I saw Her. It nearly made me cry. I loved it. I really should have cried because I wandered into Days and Trader Joe's for 20 minutes afterwards.
Looking for cookie butter?
Looking for cookie butter.
Yeah, to make you feel better. Yeah. Feel that emotional hole.
That was a mess.
That's what I did.
That's
for.
That's what I should have done.
That's what it did for me. Put the bricks in place.
Saw Birdman, really good, about a couple weeks ago. I really liked it. You know, the cinematographer should win all the awards. And lastly, how about Cat People? The best movie I saw in October that is ostensibly horror, but not really. Like, it's more about basically sexual repression of women in the 50s.
You saw the original Cat 40s? People?
Yeah, original Cat People, not the 1980s one. I've not seen that one. I've heard it's much more different.
It's a little different.
Yeah.
It's about lycanthropy.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit more of like an actual horror movie than the original one. She does turn into a panther, I guess. Spoiler alert. What have you got, Jeremy?
I guess I'll talk about my runners-up, too. I also loved Under the Skin and Yodorovsky's Dune. I thought those were both really a great fun. I have comic book movie fatigue as much as I love comic
books. Yeah, man. It's really dying down for me.
The world today, the entertainment culture is completely geared to the 12-year-old me, and the 30, almost 35-year-old me is like, come on, like, enough already. Because I don't get the same kick from the movies that I get from the comics. It just doesn't do it for me. And it's all very cool and whatever, but it's also kind of tedious for some reason. And I think some of that has to do with, anyway, I'm not sure what it has to do with that.
You'll love Birdman if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I really want to see Birdman. I think the Michael Keaton Batman is the best Batman. And
I wholeheartedly agree.
Okay, thank you.
100%.
High fives. That movie rules completely. I really loved the Captain America Winter Soldier movie. I thought it was a cool action movie. You know, and there was kind of standard by espionage kind of thing, twists and turns, but I still really liked it. I thought it was really entertaining. I also thought Guardians of the Galaxy was a great summer movie. It made me laugh, where the humor in a lot of those movies, I think, is obnoxious. And I thought the humor in that movie was actually very funny, which is not normal for me. So I was really surprised. And then I also really liked A Field in England, which Bill saw, because Bill was at the showing that I was at.
Boom!
It was about, like,
about that. That almost made it on my list.
Yeah. I don't know. That was one of those style over substance.
Yeah,
by,
I mean,
hour two or something. I was like,
not
oh,
a lot of
okay.
story. Not a lot of story, but like, and it's great to see in a theater, which I don't normally. Normally, I don't really have that much of a. But like the volume and the bigness, and then just the trippiness of it. And it was also nice to see. What's his name? Julian Barrett from Mighty Boosh had a small role in the beginning of it.
I think that for me, I think about Kenneth Anger. I think it's like everything that's happening on the screen is symbolic. Go back and read the Wikipedia article about alchemy, and then watch Field in England. It would probably be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, read up on the English Civil War, because I heard a lot of the symbolism has to do with whole roundheads versus cavaliers, Puritans versus, monarchy, that kind of thing.
That's interesting, because, I think maybe the debate would be like, I've had the discussions with people in my book club. Does that mean a movie or a book is good if you have to have all this foreknowledge to get it? Or does that mean that it's bad? Corrections! Hey, there were none that I know of. There are a few things where the words that came out of my mouth were not what was in my head, and that just had to be cut. I do want to apologize to Mike. I think if this is possible, I kind of feel like I was mansplaining to another man.
You came down hard. I was just like joking about the not reading the end. I didn't know you would, calmly talk for over 2 minutes about it.
Exactly. So I apologize. I just wanted to say that when I say a book is good, I mean I'm talking about the prose. I'm not talking about the plot, where I know a lot of other people, when they say a book is good, they mean like, it's a page turner, I can't put it down. Well, that's just not what I mean. And hopefully...
Yeah, I've gotten that vibe at the past year and a half of this podcast. So you're more of a artsy, looks cool, style is over substance kind of guy.
I'm go for the juggler. I want those page turners, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm more cool
with this. I want
my brain
up.
On
fire.
Sometimes I like artsies. Sometimes I like plotsy.
Our diversity makes us strong, I hope.
Corrections next week. Our diversity doesn't make us strong.
Yes. We broke up. We made 5 different podcasts now. We used to be Voltron.
In a weird poetic justice, the actual ending of the plot in Station of Eleven, mm-hmm. I actually didn't like it because it's very genre-y. It was like basically like the end of an episode of Walking Dead. You know, and it was like, oh yeah, great. Didn't see that one coming.
I don't know why, but I feel vindicated.
Well, there, exactly. And Mike is vindicated, and Walking Dead is cool. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.com.
ORG.
Woo! Blue Monday.
I should probably not get the ORG part every time.
I was going to say that's dangerous.
Yeah,
the part on that.
Nope. Adam Dean did our theme song.
Oh, wow. I love that. Okay, now listen, guys. We're taking 2 weeks off.
Woohoo!
Okay?
Yeah, partay.
Unpaid vacation where I shelf read here at the library for 2 weeks. But we will be back January 7th to let you know what you should be looking out for in the new year to read, watch, and listen to.
There's no date at the beginning of the movie, and there's very little concession to explaining in the movie, full stop, you know. And I think that had come out of the idea that you were going to be transported somewhere in context, you know. The main character isn't a modern person in the past who looks at everything and explains everything and has loads of exposition, which they do in a lot of movies. And I think that one of the examples we were looking at is something like Minority Report, which is the other way around in the future, where Tom Cruise's character is always surprised about all the technology he comes across. But these are things that would just be like light switches to him. They wouldn't, you know. But he has to be inquisitive about these things because he's the audience. The audience doesn't understand it, so you see through his eyes, and then you start. Everything has to be explained. And we thought, well, no, this makes something where nothing is explained because they'd know. Why would they talk about it? They'd know what this stuff is. You're just dropped in. You're parachuted into the time. And some things you don't understand, as you wouldn't if you went abroad, you know, and you didn't know anything about the culture. You just stand there going, "Why are they doing that? What is this festival about? You know, what are these words that they're using that we've never heard of?" And we wanted that so that you felt like you'd travelled back in time. We'd read around the period, and one of the things that we found that was really interesting was this idea of folklore and magic men and, you know, and how magic was becoming science and how the magic was being ironed out of religion, and that's what that whole period is kind of involved in. And then we found this stuff about mushroom circles and needing a rope to pull people out of a mushroom circle, and four men can pull a man out, and if you're inside the circle, then it's a magical realm where time is different.